Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So there's a Squid Rugby Fantasy League out there on the Rugby World Cup Fantasy League thing. I want to ask you, right, as we come to the end of round two, the Sunday from round two, how are you doing?
Okay, bear with me as I check. I am in place number, just the one I was hoping for, 4,941.
4,000. I'm in 8,525.
Oh, I'm killing it here. Can you ask about the other leagues I'm in, please?
How are you doing in the other leagues you're in?
Well, it's funny. Thank you for asking that.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
In the Long Eaton Rugby Club Falcons Super League, which is the team that I coach, I'm first.
Nice. Okay.
I'm killing it. Coach comes in and just bloody rips up. I've only recently acquired first place because of my previously discussed Caleb Clark triple captaincy. But there was a player who was ahead of me until right now. Well done to you, Ollie. I'm sure you're going to overtake me again. And also in the Long Eaton Rugby Club Senior Players League, I'm in second.
Ooh.
So out of 11. And the first one's out of 7. So.
Okay.
Doing all right in those.
Yeah.
4,000th in the Squidge League. 5,000th if you add up.
The Squid Rugby League is somehow the second biggest invitational league on the website, which is absolutely absurd.
Sure.
Like, I don't understand how that's happened. The second is Jim Hamilton's league. I don't understand
how
he's
a very big
man. He ends up being called the Big Jim League, whereas mine should be called the Tiny, Tiny Little Guy League.
Yeah.
There's almost 21,000 people in it, which is absurd. I'm in 8,000th place. So actually, when you put it like that, actually, I'm in the top half.
I'm in the top quarter.
If it was like Tetris 99, they're not going to cut me out for a while.
Yeah.
I'm doing all right. I'm not being cut out.
When everyone else uses their triple captaincy, I'm going to fall into
it. I mean, if it was Tetris 99, I'd be bloody winning, wouldn't I? Because I'm good at that. Like, better than I am at fantasy rugby. To particularly look at this weekend, right? Because I think this is something that came up for a lot of people. I think a lot of us got our picks wrong for that. For that South Africa versus Romania game.
Yeah, there's one pick in particular that went all right, but could have gone a lot better.
Yeah?
Grant Williams. Did you go Grant Williams to scrum
off? I went Grant Williams
to
scrum
off. I also went with Grant Williams to scrum off. I was like, oh, he's on the wing, he's going to score loads of tries. But the thing I didn't factor in is South Africa was scoring before the ball even had to get to the wing.
Yeah. You know? And that was the thing. I was kind of thinking that there's a decent chance that Grant Williams doesn't get that many tries, but he's going to get more than the other scrum halves, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he might get one or two tries, but like, how many scrum halves can you safely say are going to go two tries? Bloody, apparently all of them.
Yeah.
Apparently all of them are way on top of that.
And Korbosh Reinach in particular is one of those.
Yeah.
Who's going to get three tries. Like, there's something about Korbosh Reinach. He scores loads and loads of tries, and I can't figure out why that is. I can't figure out if there's one particular trait he has, such as his speed, if there's any particular reason, or reasons, multiple, why he may
ancestry,
have
maybe some sort of genes. I don't know. His genes pretty good.
Yeah, maybe his mum was
running in genes. I did that today during the bloody touch tournament.
Yes,
we'll get back to that.
More on that later. Maybe his mother was like a speedboater and was used to going really fast or something like that.
That sounds about right.
Or his like great auntie was.
Here's the
hedgehog
thing, right? No, so we're alluding to the fact that you know he bloody had a quick man in his past.
Yeah, his granddad was an Olympic
quick
sprinter
man in his past,
and his dad was a winger.
Yeah. What if his mum is secretly, like, the fastest woman in South Africa, and it's a Tommy Allen situation where people only mention his dad, and like, oh, his dad was Scottish. Yeah, his mum was the first ever captain of the Italian women's team.
Yeah.
Why aren't you bringing that up all the time?
Yeah, like, we need to bring up nepotism more in rugby, I think.
Yeah, when it's female players.
Only when it's female players.
The only
players.
One that comes up is Sophie Dugoody.
Yeah.
Right, where, you know, obviously because both of her parents were Canada captain.
Yeah.
And then she's grown up to be Canada captain.
Two of the greatest Canadian players of all time.
Yeah.
And the thing, like, let's not beat around the bush. She's going to retire the greatest Canadian player of all time, of any gender, in any form of rugby.
Yeah, oh, she's already a large part of the way there.
Yeah.
She
like,
is the...
Sorry, DTH, I love you, man.
No, but... I think she's the best Canadian player to come along in my lifetime, and how long I've been watching rugby.
Yeah.
She's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
Can we do a W15 podcast instead when that starts?
That's a great idea.
We should talk about the World Cup in the meantime, though.
Yeah.
So, because it's like, not the bloody Squid Rugby W15 retrospective.
No.
Though we should do that at some point.
We should.
So, South Africa versus Romania. There's surprisingly little to say about this for a game of 12 tries.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know. I think there is a lot. I think Romania's game against Ireland was pretty depressing. But Ireland are a team that always scores a lot of tries, always picks up a lot of tries in terms of the, you know, the way they play and so on. And they put out their strongest team pretty much because they hadn't much time away. South Africa fielded the seconds, basically. You know, to the point they had four scrum halves in the team, which is the much talked about thing.
Yeah.
And yet they were ripped apart even worse. It ended up being the same try count and a pretty similar scoreline. But for that first half an hour, it looked like it was going to be 100.
Yeah.
And Romania managed to slow the rot a tiny bit, but it was pretty horrible to watch from a neutral point of view.
The only players I'm looking at there and going are definitely first choice are Bongi and Mbanambi and Willy Leroux.
Mm. And even then, Leroux didn't start the Scotland game.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
The box has got such strength and depth that actually...
There's an argument that Malcolm Marks would be fit is above
Mbanambi. The box have got such strength and depth that maybe Sia Khaleesi is the only player you're saying is definitely first choice.
That's very fair. And
Faf de Klerk, I think, really.
Sure.
But then, you know, even then Hendricks has been very good lately. But
yeah, yeah. But let's not beat around the bush. Romania were dreadful. They were so, so bad. And it really, really pains me to say that because I really like this Romania team. Yeah. I want them to do really well. There's certain players in it who I just really, really want to see kick on and succeed in the likes of Christy Kirica and Taylor Gentiniak and so on.
And I think those were the two standouts for Romania.
By a long way. We'll get Romania out of the way, actually. Yeah. It's going to be so quick, too.
We had Hinkley Vavasa have a fantastic game against Ireland. I think he was quieter and forced a few things today.
Yeah.
I think the kind of really praise for his performance perhaps got to him a bit, and he was like, no, I am a good player, and started to force things.
Which he is.
Yeah, nothing was really coming off for him, which is, you know, I feel for a bit. But Romania were just powder puff and really disappointing, and I made this point on Twitter, but you go back a year, literally just a year, and this Romania side were a proper team. They were a legit team. They, in the last few years, they almost beat Argentina. They were looking for a try to equalise, having had a late try by Cordero. Well, Cordero makes a break, and then Gonzalez finishes it. And that led to the Romania not beating Argentina, which would have been a huge result, right? In their first game over against a T1 nation in years. They gave Italy a proper game. They gave Samoa a proper game. And this is a really good Samoa team at the minute, who you know, obviously pushed Ireland pretty hard. They
gave Tonga a game.
Yeah, oh, they beat Tonga.
Beat Tonga.
They beat Tonga by several scores. It was like by like 15 points or something.
Yeah.
They beat Uruguay in Uruguay. They beat Uruguay at home. They beat Chile. Like, they beat Portugal comprehensively. Like, they really like smashed Portugal last year.
Yeah.
They gave Georgia a game. They were a really good team. And then for reasons we still don't know, they got rid of the coach, Andy Robinson, the former England and Scotland coach. Who had become a bit of a joke in both nations.
Yeah.
But he did a miraculous job.
He was the coach Romania needed.
Yeah.
You know? And we're not saying he's one of the best coaches in the world, but he did a bloody good job.
Because
with them.
The thing with both his Scotland and England teams, they were incredibly hard-nosed and they didn't give up easily.
Yeah.
And you had that Scotland team who weren't as good in terms of the calibre of players, in terms of what they were doing, in terms of everything else, as the England, Ireland and Wales teams at the time.
Yeah.
And yet they were the ones who were beating the Springboks more regularly, and they were the ones who were beating Australia back when those were like real benchmarks, and that was a really unlikely thing for the four British teams to be doing, or British and Irish teams. And yeah, he added that kind of steel to Romania. He had that kind of hard-nosedness. And then Eugene Abjok has come in, and he's been incredibly successful at Romanian level. He's the most successful coach in professional rugby history.
He's probably, realistically, as good a coach they could have brought in at short notice.
Yes.
Like, to help out with the World Cup.
And but yet,
the thing is, it is at short notice.
Yeah.
And he's, at the moment, out of his depth.
Eugene Abjok is the most successful coach in the history of professional rugby.
He is.
Right? He overtakes Guy Nevers in terms of titles won.
Yeah.
However, he also has only ever coached up to a certain level. He's never coached a test level before. He's never coached even at the kind of top end of domestic rugby before. And he has no idea how to prepare a team for this intensity of rugby.
Yeah.
Which Andy Robinson
isn't his
like.
Fault.
Say what you want about Andy Robinson and the fact that his teams tend to play a far more limited style of rugby.
Yeah.
However,
he's experienced at this level.
Yeah.
He's been to multiple World Cups before with different teams.
The thing that Lemoyne brought to Uruguay and to Chile is he understood how to get your players to perform at the highest level.
At the elite level,
because he played bloody 200 games in the top 14 in Premiership.
I'll tell you what, do you know who I feel sorry for?
Who?
Fern Cotter.
Yeah.
Because he's come in, he's been stitched up so hard here.
Yeah.
Like, he's come in and clearly he's trying his best to make this work, but there's so little he can do in this environment. I bet he hates it. at the moment. I imagine he's now on a short-term deal, isn't
he? That's the thing. I think all of this Romania team hate it. Romania is the one team where I haven't seen travelling fans.
Yeah.
You know, and like, there's not many in the stands when you see it. I haven't seen any around France, and maybe it's cities we've been in, but I've seen fans of every single other nation. I've seen a handful of Namibia fans.
I have huge respect for the families and friends and just general fans of Romania who have travelled over this, because it can't be that enjoyable.
The sport had been in massive decline for a long time due to a series of mismanagements and all sorts in Romania. You then had this bit of a peak and a bit of a spike, and like they were finally getting things back together. And then there's one decision. We still don't know what motivated. We still don't know what changed it. But we're now left with a Romania team who don't look ready to play at this level.
No.
They don't look good enough. And like, they are physically big enough and they're physically in condition where it's not unsafe to play at this level. But in terms of their preparation and everything else and their structures, their standards.
It's the next step down from that.
Yeah, everything is too poor for this level.
It is.
And there were worrying signs in the REC this year. In terms of how they played, particularly those games against Portugal and Georgia, the teams who have really moved on and kicked on from there. But it was just so disappointing.
It's a real shame, isn't it?
Because like, they never were going to beat the Springboks, but they could have, you know, kept it to maybe 30 or 40 points a year ago with the team they had, similar with Ireland, and then potentially beaten Tonga because they had the last time they played and the one time they played under Robinson. Then, yeah, just, you know, given Scotland perhaps a bit of a game.
To transition into the game here.
Yes.
There's one Romania fan in particular who I really, really want to talk about.
Yes.
Because I think one of my favourite moments of this round, and look, it was short-lived and so on, but as Romania sung their anthem, which, as we've previously discussed on every series of the World Cup retrospective, it's so good. It's so dramatic. It's just a brilliant national anthem.
It's the two things that Romania are great at, to be fair. Like, the two things where, if you to judge the World Cup solely on these, on strength and passion of the anthem and the kit.
Yes.
I think Romania might have the nicest
kit
in this competition.
Beautiful.
I went and bought one for a bloody €100 because I needed it.
I considered it.
I haven't worn it yet.
But I think Namibia's is like 1% nicer. It's,
I'm Team Romania. I think Romania's the best kit.
I can't knock it. They're both gorgeous kits. Yeah, both of them. But anyway, so one Romania fan in the crowd, and it's a favourite of ours in the podcast for the four games we've seen him play out of the, like, 20-odd he played in Rugby World Cups. And that's Romeo Guntiniac.
Yes.
Romania legend, one of the greatest captains of all time. Like, incredible servant, won about 60-odd caps for them, which for the age he was playing in was unbelievable.
Played in the 95 World Cup, the 99 World Cup, the 2003 World Cup, and the 2007 World Cup.
And the 91 World Cup.
And the 91 World Cup.
Played in, as of 2007, he played in every World Cup other than 2007 and then coached them in 2011.
Other than 87.
87, sorry.
Yeah.
And then coached them in 2011.
Yeah.
How good is that?
Yeah.
So,
but this is it, right? We're at the stage now where now Taylor Gonteniak's played two games. There has been a Gonteniak playing in more World Cups than there hasn't.
Yeah. So there's only been three World Cups without a Gonteniak in there.
Yeah. The 2015 World Cup is between Romeo Gonteniak winning his first cap and the present day, right? The 2015 World Cup is the only one to have Romania and no Gonteniak.
Yeah. So Taylor Gonteniak, we'll briefly talk about him. So it's his first start in a Rugby World Cup, first of very, very many, because he's young. He's 21, 22.
We talked about this on a previous episode of the Retrospective podcast with Jamie Wall on the wonderful Kiwi journalist, very, very good friend of the show, and of ourselves.
Yes, we went and met up with recently.
Yeah, he's great. But we had on that episode, we mentioned him and how he looks absolutely class when he played against like Poland.
Yeah.
And will this translate? And I think it did. You know, he had a couple of good carries. He made a line break.
He was Romania's one standout player.
He was the one player going like, actually, he's coming out in credit here.
Yeah.
Sharik had a couple of good carries, a couple of good touches.
There's very little he could do in that game, though,
but,
is there?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult
in the deep end. But Gonteniak, I think, was the one player for Romania who I think we'd patronise if I stuck up for more of them, you know?
Yeah.
But I think he was the one player who I looked at and I was like, oh no, he's really looking good. Like,
yeah.
He made a couple of really great line breaks, and it was great when they cut up to Romeo in the stands, where he was beaming with Gonteniak stepping Andreas de Hazen. It was fantastic.
However, we should talk about the Springboks because he did all 76
all
of the points.
Romania. Yes.
Yeah.
Springboks, obviously, were fantastic. They didn't need to be that good, but they definitely were. Other than Vili Leroux, who...
This is the weirdest thing of this whole game, right? Vili Leroux, who I love, one of my favourite players to watch.
Should we both describe him as in one word? Well,
hold on, yeah. So I just want to run through my Willy LaRue love first. You know, like, World Rugby asked me to do a team of the decade for previous decade, and I, like, didn't even have to think about it, putting Willy LaRue in. He was instantly in there. I think he's only got better since with age. He is the most important player to the Springboks attack, as far as I'm concerned. He is one of the greatest Springbok players of the modern era. Maybe the greatest back of the modern era for the Springboks for me. Like, you know, if you're picking a best back of the current period, you're saying Lekani Rama maybe is injured. But Willy LaRue, I just, like, I love him. He's phenomenal to watch. He is the smartest rugby player in all of South Africa. You know, one of the smartest rugby players in the world, top five for me. And just, like, an almost faultless, brilliant player who always makes the correct decisions and is so good at just unlocking defences and being very calm and finding the right option and weighing it up and being patient. And today, we had to describe him in one word on the count of three. One, two, three. CAC! Willy LaRue was utter dog shit today.
I can't believe it.
And there's this weird thing where, like, there's a lot of South African fans who've convinced themselves that LaRue is terrible because every now and again he drops a high ball. Right?
Yeah.
And then they ignore the fact that, like, every try they've scored for, like, 5 years has been purely down to him.
Yeah. And he was dropping everything today. He was rubbish.
He was terrible. And suddenly, yeah, he's, like, gone from... He scores the try and he takes his one try really well.
Yeah, he was really, really good for that.
Other than that, right, like, he's giving the wrong passes. He's timing them terribly. He's dropping them. He's throwing them forward. Mm. He's, like, messing the passes up horribly. He's dropping the ball in the backfield all the time, like, under no pressure whatsoever. He's just, like, every mistake... It's like South African rugby Twitter, right? This, like, terrible Willy LaRue that they keep talking about. They finally manifested him into being, and it wasn't Willy LaRue. He's locked up in a basement somewhere, like, with bloody a handful of, like, Georgian props standing guard over him. And this, like, manifested Twitter Willy LaRue, like, wobbles into being, and Sia's like, Willy, are you okay? You don't look at yourself. And then... Willy LaRue's going, yeah, I am very good today. And he's sort of, like, wobbling and doing... It's like if...
He looked drunk.
It's like if whoever's inside the Mr. Blobby costume dressed up as Willy LaRue instead. That's a reference that doesn't translate to South Africa. And I hope my accent didn't either, but fine.
What I really like here is we've talked about one Romanian who played well, and then just
one Springbok who was bad.
Actually, no, I'm going to double down. There were two Springboks who played badly.
Okay.
Kanan Moody was... Quietly bad.
On the fancy team front, Kanan Moody, I put in because I was like, yeah, this is the game he has a stormer because he was so good in the 13 jersey.
Oh, he's been unbelievable
against,
like,
the All Blacks.
Well.
He was phenomenal, you know, player of the match against Wales in the warm up game. And I was like, yeah, this is his chance. He's going to prove that he's taking it. And clearly, Kanan Moody was thinking the same thing as me.
Yeah.
Because he spent that entire game, I think he got to, like, half time and he had to go to try and he was like, no, but this is the game where I tear it up. And he started trying so hard in the second half.
Yeah.
And it's very different to the very patient, very professional, very hardworking. You listen to any of the coaches talk and they'll talk about how professional, like, he's the most professional kid.
Yeah.
And instead, he got, like, impatient, I think, for one game. Was like, sure. No, I'm supposed to be scoring loads of tries here. Why aren't I scoring loads of tries?
I thought it would be funny to double down on that.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the 13 Springboks who played with, like, world class?
Yeah, I mean...
I say 13.
Yeah, 21.
21, you know. Yeah, Springboks were incredible. As I say, Corbis Reinach took that hat-trick superbly.
Yeah.
Inside, what, 20-odd minutes?
Yeah, 3 minutes longer than it took him to score against Canada's hat-trick in 2019. So, slouching, really. Not very quick. Must have a very slow mother.
Yes, indeed. Makisole Mapimpi, I think, was one guy who was just phenomenal.
Yeah, Mapimpi. Look, wingers.
We got man of the match.
Yeah. Wingers are very rarely man of the match contention, but I think, like, Mapimpi had to be there.
He deserved that so hard. He looked like a guy who knew he had to, like, had something to play for. You know, wanted that spot back in the team. And it wasn't just, like, he took his tries superbly, and obviously he's insanely fast. He positions himself so well. But the thing is, like, his work rate was just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it's an easy thing to praise, like, oh, he comes off his wing, he looks for work. But it wasn't that. It was just that he was just running really smart lines at the right times. He was patient and he chased kick superbly.
But this is...
He didn't get carried away.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of... It's the thing everyone says about Moody, but the opposite of Moody in this one game.
Yeah.
You know, and not every other game he's played in his career. But the thing about Makisole Mapimpi is that he is clearly the most coachable player in the world.
Yeah.
Like, there is no player you look at more and go, like, if Mapimpi makes a mistake, he's never making that mistake again. You know?
Yeah.
He will learn from that. He will change his entire behaviour. There is no player that improves more every single campaign they play.
Yeah.
And even though he's perhaps been more in and out of the Springbok team in the last year, he still is consistently getting better.
He's still one of the best players in the world. Like.
Yeah. When he first got called in, it was because he had, you know, a great deal of flair and he could score tries that no one else could score.
But that's
incredibly
it, like,
fast.
How drastically different a player is he to the one who was tearing up the Pro 14 when he first came in?
Yeah.
And he was unbelievable at that point.
Yeah.
And they've turned him into, like, a world-class player who's yeah, world class at different things, like the kick chase defensively and all of that. He's brilliant.
Yeah, he's like, you know, I bang on about him a lot, but like him and Josh Adams are the two best players in the world on kick chase.
Yeah.
Right. And Mapimpi is probably the best because he is so good in the air now.
Yeah.
Which he wasn't 4 years ago. You know, he was good in the air, don't get me wrong, but like he wasn't the phenomenal threat that he is now.
Yeah.
We've seen like his game just grow to be as complete as it possibly can be, really.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have much of a kicking game, but like otherwise, oh, there isn't a bad kicking game, it's not a standout. Every other area of his game is like phenomenal.
He's superb.
And we saw so much of it in the tries he scores.
Truly offers.
And the sheer ability, and there's like, it's not confidence, but it is confidence, you know?
Yeah.
Like just understanding his own skill set and knowing.
That's such a part of
his own pace, knowing what he can do, knowing how he can get there. Every try is so well taken.
That try where he streaked down the wing and he had LaRue inside him and he could have passed it, but just knew like, you know what? I don't need to. I'm fast enough. And I love that. I love that kind of balls out confidence.
It's that kind of thing about like actors needing to know exactly what they look at and be incredibly aware of like their own personas.
Yeah.
Like Mapimpi has that, but in a rugby place. He's incredibly aware of who
it's
he
unbelievable.
Is.
Unbelievable. So good. Speaking of as well, just sheer confidence. Scrum line out more.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. Like Oxenchey, Mbanambi, Jean Klein, I think, were all incredible. Jean Klein's such a huge asset to this Springboks team.
Jean Klein, I mean, Ireland missed out there.
Massive.
He's been phenomenal since coming into the Springboks.
He's just been a bonus Ebenezerbet for them. And he's had an incredible season with Munster. The fact that Ireland didn't want him is genuinely mad.
Yeah.
But he's honestly exactly what the... Look, the Springboks obviously needed more world-class second rows.
I think so.
Potentially world-class second rows.
I think they were really lacking in that area.
Then bringing on Ahir Snyman at half-time.
That felt like utter bullshit.
What I really loved, though, because I love Ahir Snyman. I think he's one of the best locks in the world, easily. Like, not a hot take, you know. And he's been great for Munster, right? But today we saw the return of Japanese Ahir Snyman.
Yes.
When he was tearing up League One and just offloading shit and just like being an utter maul goblin when they're all like, oh no, but you're not meant to defend mauls.
No, but those scenes of him playing in Japan was like something from a Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
You know, him just like trouncing through the streets being four times the size of everyone else.
And he did
that
again today.
Yeah,
and I love
his
that.
Viking haircut.
And I think the most important thing from a Springbok perspective is Jacques Nienaber rolled the whole bench like as early as possible and tested out people in new positions they might need to play.
Yeah. Other than Jesse Creeley didn't get on.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I don't know if they're just wrapping him in cotton wool because only one player fell down the stairs and they haven't called up the Kanyuam yet.
Yeah.
Obviously, Parr's been called up since, which I think we'll talk about in a moment.
Yes.
I think that's very interesting.
Very important.
Faf de Klerk playing 10 as well.
He played very well.
Yeah, I think because a lot of the tries you look at and you go like, okay, well, he just does well, you know.
Yeah.
Reinach just does well on there. And it's why, like, there won't be a video on this. And we were talking about including some stuff on, like, how the box have started. Honestly, there's nothing you can really take from this game because
it was a training
playing against, as you said, like a powder puff defense. There's kind of nothing. As you say, yeah, it's like one step up from a training run.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the next notch up from semi-opposed training. It's fully opposed training.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's nothing too much to take from this. Like, you know, Damian Willemse was perfectly fine, you know.
Yeah.
Took his tries really well. You know, the one where he finishes it very nonchalantly, I loved.
Yeah.
Big fan of that.
The ball he flung for one of his early tries, I forgot who scored it. But
yeah. The penalty try as well from scrum. Just always great to see.
I like rugby. But
yeah. But, right, the thing I think we do need to talk about, I think the Springboks on attack looked better, and obviously they're playing against a more tired Romanian team by this point, so it's a different deal. I thought the Springboks looked better on attack with Faf de Klerk at 10 than with Phillips at 10.
I agree. I think de Klerk's kicking game when he first came on was outstanding. I think he was really, really kicking the leather off it. And he reapplied the whole kicking on the front foot thing and, you know, dropped the wingers back again. And just like, he reset the game plan like it was back to minute zero when he came on and did a brilliant job in attack at 10.
The thing that bothers me about Damian Phillips as a fly half, I think, is he, from that position as first receiver, thinks, what can I do here? Where I think Faf de Klerk, when he came on, was far more like what Pollard does and what most great fly halves do, which is what do we need here?
Yeah, sure.
Right? Like, there's no level of considering his own ability.
And that's not necessarily a criticism of
No, it's not. And it's why he's a brilliant player
he's
in other positions.
He's a ludicrously great player.
I personally don't like him as a fly half.
Agreed.
I feel like it's like you're playing with a third centre instead of with a fly half.
Yeah, I agree.
I just don't think it
he's
works.
He's great at 12. He's brilliant at 15.
Yeah, great at 13. Complain
and
on the
he's
wing
a
well.
Very good 10, especially at a level like this. But if it's a World Cup final and he's starting at 10.
No. I would, look, if it came down to it, Pollard's obviously been called up since.
Mm.
But I would start Faf de Klerk at 10 over him, I think.
Yeah.
Because de Klerk just had more of a sense for the shape of a game and just more tactically aware, because obviously that's his bread and butter, just doing it from a slightly different position. He also had this like big air of like asking himself, what would Handre do?
Yeah.
You know? Which is basically hang in the boot, kick it a lot, and crash ball every now and again.
Yeah. Which,
and then sometimes slot in and do that. You know that pass that Andre Pollard does?
Yeah, I know.
Where he's like, you know, he kind of like weighs it up, has the ball wide in front of him, and he throws it like wide and flat.
Yeah,
for like someone to run onto. Yeah, he was doing that a lot. Like, it was very much like a tiny blonde Andre Pollard sitting there.
Just as importantly, we have to talk about Marco van Staden's darts.
Yes.
Him getting some experience hooking. They've neglected to call up an extra hooker.
Yeah.
And they've leaned into it. They meant it when they said, we're going to give Marco van Staden some experience as a hooker. Obviously, that is very much a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But they've proven it's possible. I think he was excellent throwing into the line. I don't think he missed his man once. And throwing difficult balls, he wasn't just going to the front every time.
The really interesting thing here, though, is that Jacques Nainaber said in an interview, this was something they started doing in the alignment camps, which they started doing 3 years ago. So 3 years ago, they went, okay, there might be a situation where we need this.
Yeah.
We're going to teach one of our back rowers to play hooker.
Yeah.
And they also called up at the same time Dion Fahey, the next series they had after
who was really good afterwards. He was fantastic. Well.
And at the time, you're kind of wondering, why have they called up a 36-year-old back rower? That's mental, who's uncapped. And actually, his ability to play hooker, the fact that he spent a large part of his career as a hooker and has moved into the back row, gives them that option, gives them that versatility.
He's equally good in both positions.
And then Marco van Staden doing the same thing means that A, you don't have a situation like Ireland had in the Six Nations where you lose both your hookers and suddenly they had someone who's able to throw in just because Josh Hunterley enjoys it. They've got that problem solved. But they've also now, in a situation such as this, where they're trying, where in order to get one of their most important players back in Andre Pollard, they have dropped a hooker from their squad. They've gone down to just two hookers, and one of them, even then, is kind of a back row at the
same
time.
It's a worthy sacrifice to bring in Andre Pollard. He's so important to them.
It's classic Razzie Erasmus lateral thinking.
Yeah.
To teach a back rower 3 years out to throw in so that you can move him into that position. He looked at the pieces he had available to him. What's the shortest back row we can afford to kind of use as that option? And developed him into a player who can legitimately fill in as a hooker.
And that's
It's that kind of like Razzie Erasmus lateral genius that got them to the last World Cup final and then saw them bloody smash England when they got there.
And he's so right to do that because World Cup years are cruel. It could have been Khaleesi.
Yeah.
It could have been Lacanuam.
Yeah.
It could have been Pollard, and it was Pollard, you know?
Yeah. And it was Am. And it was Khaleesi.
Exactly. That's what
just
I'm saying.
Khaleesi's a bloody freak.
Khaleesi is a freak. And if Lacanuam was in the situation Pollard was in, where he comes back into full training a week into the World Cup, they totally would have wanted to do this.
Yeah.
There's so many players in the squad that are so important to them that they would have happily done that again. So, kudos to you, Razzie and Jacques.
Yeah.
Fair play to
you. No, superb. Superb, superb, superb.
And Pollard being back in going to make such a huge difference.
We should talk about Pollard.
Yeah.
Because I think this is the really interesting thing about the Springboks. This is almost more interesting than the game itself.
Sure.
We kind of knew it was coming, even before the tournament, before Malcolm Marx had called up.
Yeah.
I think the theory was that Grant Williams would be sleeping and Razzie would sneak into his room with a nail gun.
Yeah.
Or like, he'd just be looking behind him as he walked down a set of stairs every time. Or like, you know, there'd be something where Kobus Reinach one day would just be going for his breakfast and he'd be like, why is my yogurt green when everyone else is a normal colour?
I like the thought that like Jaden Hendricks or Grant Williams gets a phone call from Razzie and he's just like, hi, so we've got some great news here. One more question for you. Do you want to go to the World Cup for a bit?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Yeah, I'd love to go to the World Cup. Yeah, okay, for a bit, yeah. Do you want to go to the World Cup for a couple of weeks? I mean, the World Cup's quite long. Yeah, but you'll be there for a couple of weeks, won't you? You know what I mean? No, what do you mean? Oh, don't worry about it. You'll see, all right? You'll see. And then the squad's like, oh shit, Andre's not in there.
This is the thing, right? Like, you then had that. Where the journalist asked them up front, asked Nainaber up front, like, are you just going to make a player fake an injury? He's like, no, that'd be a horrible thing to do. And so you're like, well, you know what's going to happen, don't you?
Yeah.
Right, after this Romania game, Grant Williams is going to mysteriously win a cruise. So you have to leave now. The cruise of a lifetime.
Yeah. The entire family can come.
Your mum will be angry.
We were joking before the game that Grant Williams is going to score a try, and then he's going to have to go down. And Sol's going to have to stretch his calves out. She's like, "Oh no, you pulled a hamstring."
Tom Williams is going to run off with a blood capsule.
Yeah.
Just hand it to him.
Yeah.
But no, it does mean they've got to a situation naturally because one of their best players got injured, where they're able to call up Pollard.
It's a fair swap. But
yeah, Andre Pollard. I said this before the tournament in the video on them. That I think might be the most important player to a player's, the most important player to a team's chances in this World Cup.
Mm.
I think he's up there. I'm not sure that's the case anymore of how well Mani Lobok has played a couple of times.
Yeah.
But also, they can lean on Pollard in a way. If you lean on Mani Lobok, he might just do a, you know, flying scissor kick that somehow results in a drop goal. Or he might do a flying scissor kick that
like
somehow...
Like Nagari earlier.
Yes. Yeah. He might do a flying scissor kick that somehow, you know...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, somehow results
shatters
in,
his feet.
Yes. And see a Khaleesi's. And results in a bloody series of zombie ex-Springboks rising from the ground and just dragging Bill Beaumont under with them. And they get dispelled from the Rugby World Cup for the fact that Mani Lobok accidentally did voodoo witchcraft while trying to do a kick. And it accidentally just, like, killed all of world rugby.
We said this on a prior episode, but like,
Mani Lobok. We did say that on a prior episode. Yeah. That is the likely thing to happen.
Mani Lobok is obviously incredible, but if in a World Cup final, considering the style of rugby you have to play to win a World Cup final, you would start an injured Andre Pollard over him every day.
I think you might.
Yeah.
And having him back in is crucial. Even if they do go over the Bok, having him to come off the bench in a quarter final.
Yeah.
Especially if it is against a team like, you know, they're likely going to draw the All Blacks or France.
Yeah.
We'll find out, you know, when they play Ireland, as to which way around that's probably going to fall, because it looks like France are going to top that group and New Zealand are going to come second. It would be enormous and actually very fitting and very interesting if they started with Lobok and he was able to pull some magic bullshit, then gets pulled off at 45 minutes and they just slow it right down.
Yeah.
You know, if the Springboks can get a lucky try off some magic bullshit, especially if they've got Larue as well
see them
to pull something.
A half each, you know.
Yeah. Which I think would be a really inspired thing to do. I think that'd be really smart.
Yeah.
And then you go into the semi-final, which would be against probably, you know, England, Wales, Japan, Argentina, Australia, Fiji. One of those teams. All of those teams are either silly fun teams who you probably need to slow down the game against.
Yeah.
Or they're teams like England and Wales who are incredibly conservative and want to bait you into traps.
Sure.
And... we saw in the last World Cup, right? You look at the Chasing the Sun documentary. The section on the Wales game is really interesting because the thing, Fassi says the thing, like, this Welsh team are not like the English, they're not like the Irish, they're tough. And the thing Andre Pollard in particular says is what Wales are trying to do is, like, lay you traps and tempt you into running the ball when you shouldn't. And beating Wales is entirely about patience.
Yeah.
And being more patient than them because they're the most patient team in the tournament. And that's why they got so far, was just they were more patient than everyone they played against.
Yeah.
And everyone else tried to force things and then Wales just waited and ate off their mistakes. And they just knew they couldn't afford to give them anything.
Yeah.
And in the end, you know, leads to a game that's incredibly even. And if that game went on an extra 20 minutes, I think Wales probably equalised and they, you know, it just goes back and forth and back and forth. Like that. And I'm very glad the game didn't go an extra 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But South Africa just knew they had to be ahead when the scoreboard finished. And Pollard was so into that idea. And he said in that documentary, that was tactically the most interesting game I've ever played.
Mm.
And he was like fascinated by it and obsessed by it and like loved it as a challenge because he'd never played a game. He said like as a game of chess, you know, you use that term.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the best game he'd ever played as an objective term. You know, not in terms of, you know, his performance.
Yeah.
Just in terms of what he was having to do was very different to any
most
of the matches he played.
Yes.
Yeah. It was just a really different contest. And suddenly, that guy who really thinks about those games that those
welcome
games
that to turn, the World Cup, Andre. It's good to have you back.
Very different prospect to Lobok, who would go, you know, who'd fall into those traps. And he may just spring it in such a way that it completely changes the game and causes him to batter Wales or England or whoever. Argentina could equally be.
Pleased to see Andre back.
Yes, absolutely bloody delighted. And change the complexion of the World Cup.
Yeah, massively.
You know, I think South Africa become contenders.
They're back in it now. They're back in it.
South Africa become contenders overnight.
We'll miss Malcolm Marks, but hey.
Yeah.
They've got a more than capable replacement in Andre Pollard. I mean, Bonga Benai.
If you were given the choice, right, if you were Razzie or Nineveh, and you were given the choice of you can have a fully fit Malcolm Marks or you can have a fully fit Andre Pollard, which one would you take?
A fully fit Andre Pollard.
Me too.
You can have Bonga Mbonambi, who's one of the best hookers in the world. He's like top three, probably.
Exactly.
Or thereabouts. But I do think
they've been preparing
for
the situation for years.
Yes, they should introduce a rule whereby the player you call up should have to play 40 minutes in the position that
I agree with this.
So he should have to play 40 minutes. But you know they were probably against Ireland.
Yeah, but you know in 2018 they probably had like they did like 3 months of drills of Henry Palmer playing hooker just to work it out. You know,
yeah, anyone can throw into that lineup. Yeah, so I think that's Ireland. Then that's South Africa, Romania, pretty well covered.
Yes. We said there wasn't going to be much to say about that game.
Yeah.
But hey, welcome to Rugby Land.
But hey, Romania has so much going on.
We were in Rugby Land earlier when we, in a random park in Nice, 15 minutes from our hotel, played a touch tournament. I mean, you had to leave prematurely.
Yeah.
Or not leave, you had to go and sit on a bench nearby prematurely.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of fun. That was fantastic.
That was so, so
good. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Good. Firstly, I want to say a massive thank you to Ed Jenkins.
For yes.
Because like, we could not have done that without him. We couldn't have organised that. Basically, Ed Jenkins, some of you may be familiar, especially the South African listeners who have just rimmed for ages. You may recognise him from trolling you on Twitter at some point in the past. But he's very relentless and good at what he does. I don't know how he does it.
I was saying this to him earlier. I said this to him in person. Like, I couldn't do what you do, man. Like, yeah. I'm in awe of it. He is maybe the best deliberate troll in rugby.
Yes.
He's just phenomenal. The way he comes up with new takes to just wind people up is incredible.
He's extremely individual and unique in the way he does it. Yeah. I have the utmost respect for him. However, he was just so genuinely lovely in helping me and you organise.
And his family, you know, his two sons and his wife came down as well. Yeah. And his dog, most importantly.
Yes, more on that in a bit. But yeah, he helped me find the only spot of flat grass in Nice. Genuinely. He tried to get us to play on his rugby pitch of his local club, but unfortunately it's council owned and, you know, I've experienced this before. It's horrible when you have to deal with the whole council thing. And he did his best to pull the strings for that, but like he helped out so much, provided the balls and the cones and stuff, and just generally helped the whole thing flow superbly.
Yeah.
So massive thanks to Ed first and foremost. But what an amazing day. So we put out a hypothetical tweet initially about this, kind of saying, would people be interested in a touch tournament in France?
And yeah, it was something that we talked about a long time ago. Like, it's a great idea, something we'd love to do.
Yeah.
And then we got close to the tournament, and I know I was very much like, we don't have the time to organise this properly.
Yeah.
And fair play to you for really pushing on and going like, no, let's just do this.
Yeah.
Let's just make this happen.
Thankfully, again, like it was a huge thanks to Ed for kind of helping me get the wheels in motion. So I did have somebody to bounce the ideas off when you certainly had, you know, other stuff in terms of logistics, planning this World Cup and then making this all happen up to your neck.
I'm writing bloody 20 videos on those teams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there was a lot going on, and my brain was like, I can't comprehend the idea of five touches. Never mind at all.
Yeah, we were both insanely busy, but I think I had five more minutes free than you did to plan this tournament per week. But anyway, so yeah, so put out a couple of hypothetical tweets and then we decided that when both Wales and England were in town in Nice would be the perfect time because I think that's probably where we have the biggest audience. So we'd get the most people down because I thought there wouldn't be anyone turning up.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get like at absolute best about 20 people.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I thought that would be the absolute best case scenario.
Thank goodness. When I put the tweet out, I did like a head count of people saying like, oh, I've got five mates coming, you know,
and
I totaled them up to about 30, 40 odd people.
Yeah.
And I thought, how many of them are going to get up at 10 a.m. on Sunday?
But that was it. Like a large part of me was, I thought 20 was a best case scenario.
Yeah.
I was really expecting to kind of have you know, enough for two teams. Yeah. We're looking at maybe like 10, 12 people.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be a bit like when I did the meetup in Japan. And, yes. You know, there was enough people to fill a very small bar, which was lovely, and it was great. It was a lovely atmosphere, and it went really well, and, like, the people there were delightful, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And a few of them came down to today, you know.
Yeah.
Rihanna and David, great people, great guys.
No, they were so lovely. And Japan. Helped me they with came my back issues here. That I had later on, yes. Which we'll go on to. But we also had, so, friends of the channel and the pod, Adam from the WAU, who's lovely and was such
put
great
in
value.
The greatest tackle I've seen in touch, maybe ever.
Also scored the winning try in the first game.
Yeah.
Where he slid in the corner.
Oh, God. But so he made this phenomenal tackle where a player was genuinely about to score. And he did this, like, flying, diving.
Like
and just
goalkeeping.
Like, yeah. I mean, he mentioned he used to be a goalkeeper and that's where it came from. But just, like, slap the guy's knee and save the try. It was unbelievable. It was
brilliant.
A great defense.
He had a great game in
that. He had a great game.
Yeah, then scored the winning try. He received a through-the-legs pass from myself, which you'll attest to is a move I've tried many times. And it's worked maybe 10% of the times I've tried it. So, and that's generous.
And you've tried it about 4,000 times.
Yeah, I have. But hey, it worked on that occasion. And he dived in the corner and then literally his celebration was getting up and said to me, fucking hell, I was never not diving for that. but that was great. It was great to have him on our team.
Yeah.
Ben John, the rugby trainer, former Ospreys, professional rugby player, and just amazing content. Like, you will have seen his content because he's
the
so
best
good
out there. At
unbelievable
what he does. By such a distance, he's
such
fantastic.
A lovely bloke. As
he's
well.
Lovely. Like, I've met him a few times, and he's just the loveliest, like, warmest guy. What? I first met him at, we got invited to a box. We happened to be at the same place to watch the Premiership final last year. Now with the Freddie Burns drop goal, the iconic Freddie Burns drop goal, and yeah, we pretty quickly realised we were the only people actually watching the rugby and started to talk. Because there's a lot of kind of corporate, you know, people sitting around drinking and whatever because of free
using the
free
bar
and stuff. Yeah. And we were like both really invested in the rugby and we ended up talking and we got on really well. And,
he's such a nice guy.
He's just he's great. He's wonderful.
What I love about Ben John is like he was a pro rugby player for a number of years and a really bloody good one for the Ospreys. Like he was such a great player.
He was one of those players that, like, you know, you always have players at your club, you're always advocating, like, no, he should play for Wales.
For
Wales.
Yeah.
And, like, I know if I was a Cardiff fan or a Scarlets fan, I might not have been thinking that, but, like, I was always on the Ben John for Wales train.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that he was that guy, and also, like, since retirement, he's been such a massive advocate for, like, youth rugby, women's rugby, like, minis rugby, like, touch, walking touch, like, vets rugby. Wheelchair rugby. He has made content about all of these things, like schools rugby and stuff, like amateur tries, and he'll like analyze them and talk about how great it is. I think his energy and passion for the game and the growth of it, and like really just championing anyone involved. If you look, he works so hard. If you look at his Instagram and see all the comments from like kids saying like, "Oh, I love your content," he always like has conversations with them.
Yeah.
And goes like, "Thanks, buddy. What position do you play? Who do you play for? Who's your favourite team? Who's your favourite player?"
Yeah.
All of that. Keeps people so engaged in rugby. It's so important having people like him.
He loves it. And he clearly loves all levels and all forms of rugby.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, recently, like last time I spoke to him, like how much more engaged and how much more he's enjoying it as a fan.
Yeah.
Lately, like he always loved it as a player and always loved the skill stuff in particular.
Yeah.
And a real focus on like small stuff.
He clearly had so much fun today. As we record this, at that touchdown one. Like straight away he turned up, he was just like, "Lads, you've smashed this. Like there's so many people here," which there were. How many people were there?
There was about 100 people.
Yeah.
About 100 people.
That was a few people have estimated around 100 people.
So I was trying to work this out because we had three pitches running of between like 6 and 8 players. I think most of them were about 8 at the time running. We then had two teams waiting on the sidelines because we didn't have pitch space for them.
Yeah.
Without moving over to a different park.
Which
at the other
I
side
think
of the
eventually
road.
Became 4 teams waiting on the sidelines.
Yeah. And then we also had about 10 people come just to watch.
Yeah.
Including Ben James of this podcast
mate.
In past.
The first time we met him in person.
I've met him about 5 times in person.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. First time I've met him in person. It was great to see him. We recorded a podcast with him. Do listen to that, actually, on Wales Online's Wales Rugby podcast.
Best. Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's now the best time I've met Ben James in person. Previously, the week before Wayne Pivac lost to Georgia, the press conference, like, so I was doing a thing for Scrum 5 that day, and basically, me and Gareth Rousseau were going to interview a player together. We didn't know who the player was until I turned up, and they went, "Actually, it's going to be Wayne Pivac we're interviewing, so we're going to take you out and place you with Lauren Jenkins." And I was like, you know what, fair enough. Like, I get that completely. But I got to sit in the background of Wayne Pivac's press conference, except they didn't have a chair for me, so I just stood up. So I was just stood in the background. I stole one of Wayne Pivac's biscuits that he had set out in his bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I gave to you for Christmas.
You did.
I gave you other stuff for Christmas, but
you
also...
I don't think you did.
No, I did. But also, yeah, a biscuit from Wayne Pivac.
Yeah, great.
Just like a cursed item of a Wayne Pivac era biscuit.
Yeah.
And me and Ben James had to like just awkwardly wave at each other like while he was trying to talk to Wayne Pivac.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Yeah, Ben was like our unofficial director of rugby there.
Yeah.
So... We're going to talk about more of the positives in a moment,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But there was a moment, and it's unfortunately caught on camera. I had to go off injured, and I was done for the day, where I watched the footage back. You had a bit of a run, and I went in to go and play scrum half. I got my footing completely wrong. I tripped over the ball, and I rolled my ankle, and had to limp off the field, like a hop off the field. And like straight away, Ben James just found it hilarious. just laughing. And I was just like, you know what? Good on you, mate. Good on you. Yeah. So I've had ice on that all day. Rhiannon and David, who you mentioned earlier, were golden. They got me some ice and like a towel to wrap around and stuff. But it's getting there. I'm hobbling slightly less, but hopefully.
Yeah,
next
no,
couple
you
of days.
Were properly done.
Yeah.
We are staying like a 10-15 minute walk from there, and we had to get an Uber back.
Yeah, it cost me €12.
Yeah.
But I could not walk for a little bit. And it's really annoying because, like, I've rolled my ankle. It's not like I broke my leg.
No.
But, you know, it is what it is. But I also had a very nice message from Ben John asking if I was all right afterwards.
Because he's
great. Yeah. That was very unfortunate. But the rugby and stuff we played was really, really good. So we introduced our
thing, right?
Laws. Like, to everybody at the start, and everybody was very on board. We made it very clear that you're not allowed to take it too seriously, and everyone was like, thank God, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody was of the exact same mindset as us.
And that was the thing, right? So you had Ben John turned up, obviously, who was a former professional, who's bloody exceptional, and we know if he was taking it seriously, he would have torn all of us. We had a couple of England Touch internationals turn up. We had a Scotland Touch international turn up.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of people who were incredibly good. We had another lad who I believe plays to a very high level in Ireland. We had, you know, plenty of people.
I was told the Dutch scrum half was there.
Yeah. Well, so there was a guy in like a Greek rugby t-shirt who was
very nice,
very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had plenty of people turn up who were clearly played to a much higher level than, you know, me or you. And everyone thankfully bought into the idea of just pissing about.
Yeah.
Ben John, not James. Ben J, you know. At one point trying this utterly audacious thing where he tried to do like a Fijian like Nakarawa dummy around someone before popping it behind the back to someone else, and it didn't come off, but God bless him.
He was heavily marked by the boy Eros on our team, who was absolutely class, who's 10 years old and is a baller. And also there was these two Japanese kids who were absolutely ripping
mate
up.
So yeah, at the end we went into just having one big game. When people started to leave and our team dropped out and everything, I was like, well, you know, we'll just widen the pitch and have one big game. And that was a great fun. I think that was like a real laugh, and people seeing less of the ball, but like it was really open, it was really good fun. The final tries being scored when we were trying to fit lots of people onto free pitches, and I think everyone really enjoyed that. But there were these two Japanese kids that came along, and there was just a family on the sideline, and their dad joined in for a bit, and then he left.
I was told they weren't like fans of the channel. They just saw rugby and they were just like, yeah, can we join
in?
Yes, absolutely.
So there was a family on the sideline and they were clearly there for the game in the evening.
Yeah.
And they were just walking around the park, just walking around Nice. They had massive Japan flag at the side. I don't know if you saw this, that they stood at the side. So the mum and the dad joined in at first. First it was the dad and the son joined in together. The dad then walked off exhausted. Apparently the dad's a former or current professional in one of the Japanese professional leagues.
Okay.
That's what I heard. Because he was good. And then he went off, clearly just, you know, a bit tired.
Yeah.
And his son kept playing. And then
two sons, right?
Yeah, then the kid joined in. The other kid joined in later. The brother joined in later. And they were unbelievable.
They scored, like, all the tries.
Like, to a point in which you're legitimately going, that kid's going to play international rugby.
Yeah.
Like, the most talented. Like, they're probably, like, five or six.
I'd say a little bit older than that. I'd say, like, eight or nine. But
okay. Oh, I think younger than that. So, I think they're maybe, like, seven or eight then.
Yeah, they were so good.
But they were tiny. They were like, you know, an age at which I didn't know what shape a rugby ball was.
Yeah.
And they were genuinely, and like, there's always a bit when it's a kid, you know, of like I had one where I was slotting in the fullback and I let one of the kids step me. And like, I could have got him if I really tried, but like, he'd pretty much beaten me.
Put in a good enough step.
If it was a game of full contact, right, like, I could have like caught his arm and he still would have scored, you know? And like, if it's a game of touch, I could have touched, and wasn't going to touch him there. But the point wasn't that. The point was that he, in the first place, he'd legit beaten three people to get into that situation.
Yeah.
And then did me all in such adults. A way that all I could do was like briefly graze his arm if I tried. You know, if I tried, but I, you know, whatever. And
those
they were just
were insane, man.
Completely like tearing everyone apart.
Yeah.
And his brother comes in and starts for the other team and starts tearing the other side apart.
Unbelievable.
It's genuinely like, we're gonna, in 15 years time or something, be watching the World Cup and there's gonna be a young Japanese player playing. And he's going to mention in an interview, it's going to come up in commentary, that how many of years ago he came to the World Cup in France and he, you know, where he fell in love with the Rugby World Cup or whatever, his first experience of the Rugby World Cup. And one of the things he really remembers was playing a game of touch against some random adults in the park. And no, we're going to go, holy shit, yeah. It was them.
And we've got clips that will go viral. You know.
Yeah.
So otherwise, so yeah, the games, the original games that we had, they set up and like everyone just got straight into it. Really loved it. Everybody was on the same wavelength. Nobody was like, you know, trying to get like small victories. Like,
yeah.
Everyone
yeah.
was just like really like willing to just abide by the, you know, the values that we'd
the
set
values
up.
Of our great game.
Yes. There was a great point where one of them had full time called. And then they start shaking hands and said, rugby values, lads, rugby values. And they were really like going for it. And then they set a tunnel like, rugby values, clapping their hands as they went through. And it was great. Like, it was just really good seeing that everybody was in on the joke.
Yeah.
You know, because I said this to you earlier, but like, if you take a group of English rugby fans, just a random group of English rugby fans in the stadium, you would assume certain things about them in terms of like the way they approach rugby.
Yeah.
But those guys were like so ironic in their whole approach to it. And I loved it.
I had a Dragons fan. Oh God, it was the one of those incredibly Welsh names. It wasn't Daviv. It was a similar one.
Okay.
Shout out to the one Dragons fan who came over to me and just said, you know, the thing is, you wouldn't get this in other sports. Rugby's just different.
It's so different. It's so different.
Very tongue-in-cheek. And we had a little, like, rugby values tirade.
I love stuff like that.
He then told me he's a Dragons fan. I said, oh, I'm so sorry, mate. Yeah, lovely guy. Lovely guy. He had to leave early, but it was great.
So many lovely people we met there.
It was fantastic. Like, everyone like, across the board was not a dickhead, just, and that was wonderful.
Yeah, so many people just so saying many people, lovely things.
Yeah, just, like, really kind, really lovely. Like,
just really like-minded.
Without wanting to be big-headed, like really proud of the audience and the kind of community we built, and I really want
to do that again.
I now want to do far more, you know, having done this and having done the.
And we'll do this in the UK, no scrum, no win thing.
Yeah, we have to do more because I think the community is so lovely that's sprung out of this.
Yeah,
and we should be doing more of that.
Yeah.
And I think generally because the channel and the core content of it is so built in a way that doesn't involve fan engagement and doesn't involve audience engagement, I think I've kind of perhaps moved away from it more than we perhaps should because it's just such a lovely group.
It's so cool.
Lovely people.
We've met so many nice people in the last couple of weeks that
it's just,
I want to meet more of them. I want to meet more of them and have more chats with them because as I say, they're like-minded and have the same approach to rugby and engagement with rugby and knowledge of rugby that we do. And that's really, really cool. But the most important thing I think that happened today was
happy three times.
Yes, we started our second game, which I have recorded. I have footage of this, and the opposition who we're playing against, who was team rugby trainer Ben John's team,
were featuring two touch internationals as well.
Yeah, they didn't need Ben John.
No, Ben John subbed off, and they were still tearing us apart.
At one point, I was like, at the start, I was like, oh come on, Ben, join our team. He was like, sorry mate, I've been claimed, and I was like, fair enough. You know, they probably need him more than we do. No, nuh-uh. They absolutely tore us up. But yeah, playing against them, and they did some like fancy out the back shit, which was really nice. And they dropped the ball, and we got the turnover. You pick up the ball, you put it through your legs, and I pick it up, and I notice something. I point, and I say, "Dog on the pitch!" And I'd spoken to Ed, I'd seen that he brought his dog, and I thought, right, you need to get this dog on the pitch. Like, this has to happen.
Yeah.
And this dog got on the pitch, two or three times, and there was another dog who got on the pitch.
There were three different dogs that got on the pitch.
Three different dogs that got on the pitch. Mate.
There was a great bit as well where some Dachshunds went by, and Dachshunds are my favourite dog.
Yes.
And they walked towards the pitch, did not quite step on. And I was so distracted that a try was scored past me.
Next time we run something like this, bring your dogs, people.
Please.
Get them on the pitch. Get them involved. The dog, whose name I can't remember, but she was on our team and she did very well, I thought. She was good in attack, good in D, got very stuck in. And yeah, it was great to have a dog on the pitch because I feel like we'd be hypocrites if we didn't have dogs on the pitch in our World Cup.
And I said this elsewhere, but I thought it was fantastic that we were able to lead by example to the main competition.
Yes.
And they should be putting dogs on the pitch, you know?
They should be
allowing people to be uncompetitive other than England. No, England are playing really well, but it's an easy joke. It's a cheap joke. And they should also put dogs on the pitch.
You should.
What are they doing? Why are there no dogs on the pitch so far?
All in all.
Like 2 weeks into the World Cup.
Dogs on the pitch are a necessity in rugby.
Agreed.
But just generally, that was just such an enjoyable event. Like, I've just got such great memories of that and the people that were there. That was the most important thing for me, was just like, everybody who came up and chatted to us before or afterwards or during or whatever, all had like great sense of humor. Like, I feel like there were very few people like coming up to us and going like, oh, hi, my name is this, blah, 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 which is, I love it when people do that. But they first, they would always break the ice with like a joke and say, oh, yeah, great pass, Squidge, when you throw an intercept, or like, oh, bloody great run, Will, when you fall over and, you know, bruise your ankle or whatever. And then they'll have the conversation with you. I think that's, I really like engagement and the conversations like that.
Only moment in my life where I felt a kind of like YouTube privilege thing where it's been like, oh, like this is different, is I took an interception and scored. And, you know, as I was putting it down, like, there was like someone on the sideline went, oh, it's Squidge. And I then got a round of applause.
And you got one boo from the crowd.
Yeah,
I don't know who did that. I don't know who that was, but it must be a dick.
But the thing is, right, everyone else's tries were getting like a light, and everyone stopped like, oh no, this is an event. We have to stop for this. And like, it was bullshit and I didn't deserve it. I just scored like a very boring standard interception try.
Yeah.
But everyone was like, no. Well,
the double standard applied when you threw the interception pass, and everyone was like, "Way!" Like, there was one point when Ben John threw a pass into touch, and everyone was like, "Get a load of this guy!"
Could never get an Ospreys contract like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, tell you what, right? If you want a hot topic, you know those two new Ospreys kits for next season.
Yeah,
what do you make of them?
I really like them both.
Yeah, I spoke to Ben about them. Yeah, he loves them both as well.
Yeah, I was part of that conversation, but yes.
Well, you didn't speak, so I didn't notice you. You're not, you never scored a great try against Treviso.
Yes, which we brought up to him.
He loves that. So, yeah, the other key thing about this tournament, right, is I had to play it in bloody jeans.
Oh my god.
I spent 20 minutes wandering around. You spent 10 minutes then ran off to actually head to the park.
Yeah, because we were running late.
Yeah. I spent 20 minutes running around Nice trying to find a sports shop that was open at 10 in the morning and 9 in the morning on a Sunday. Turns out, there's not. There's two that said they were open and neither of them exist.
That's really sketchy.
Yeah.
Not fine.
I went to both the locations and they're like, no, there's nothing there. So I played in bloody jeans and Converse. And whenever you watch the footage back, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm really like slow and undynamic. And it's like, yeah, because I'm wearing bloody jeans.
There was somebody, one other guy was wearing jeans. Ben James loved him. He said, my favorite player is the guy who's playing in jeans, who's like proper like denim jeans.
Yeah.
And he's putting a shoulder on every single time. Who was Welsh, and I can't remember his name, unfortunately. But he was great. And also the guy who was wearing a scrum cap. That was also really, really funny. That was just a great bit of attention to detail, where you're mocking the idea of taking it too seriously.
It's very good. Very good. I can't believe they repurposed the one good joke in Don't Drop the Egg to finally be used for good.
Yeah, yeah. But with a very, very different audience.
Absolutely. Well, I think that takes us through the less interesting parts of Sunday. That's Sunday through to like 5 p.m.
Yes.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with a episode on... I've got no idea what order these are going out.
Yeah.
You alluded to yesterday's podcast, which we haven't recorded yet.
Yeah,
this is all going all over the place. It's all like the whole channel, the whole content stuff is a bit of a mess at the minute. But I think we're slowly getting a handle off on it after a really difficult first week. And we're slowly getting on top of things. Because like all our plans were thrown up in the air and changed in that first week of the World Cup, and it was a nightmare. But we're slowly getting a handle on it. There'll be one on the other two games plus the bloody Saturday, if you haven't heard that already, and the last week and everything else. All coming around. I hope you're having a lovely World Cup, and we'll see you soon. Will we?
I think we will. And do you know what I think we'll see them for?
More rugby!
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.